Set in for here for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You know the mantra: go organic, take public transport, recycle more, use less water, boycott multinationals, stop using those disposable nappies, shop locally. Well, Leo Hickman is someone who does it, or at least he tries. He's a writer for Britain's Guardian newspaper and uses that philosophy to live what he calls the ethical life. It used to be that if you dragged your empty bottles to the recycling centre, well, you felt quite a bit virtuous. What if you had to think about everything, the way you eat, shop, travel and live? Not just what you use to scrub the toilet, but the toilet itself. Not just the car you drive, but where you drive it. And on top of that, you have to spread the message. Be a good neighbour. Inspire others to follow your example. All the while keeping a tab on what you're doing to the environment. Sounds great, but you still have to get to work on time, raise a family, make ends meet on your meagre salary. Connection listeners, come on, tell us the truth. Do you try to live an ethical life? Where do you succeed? And where do you fall short? If you work hard and mind your own business, whatever it is, what should it matter to anyone else, even to us here on The Connection, as to how you live? How do you define your ethical life? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, let's come clean here at The Connection. I've just arrived here in Britain, and what I was greeted here was by an organic box. Yes, this is going to tell you a secret, that here at The Connection, the producers and editors, they eat organic vegetables and fruit. I can't say whether the paper and the pencils are recycled, but they are making an effort. But we're going to be joined now by someone who's making a colossal effort, Leo Hickman. He's a journalist for the Guardian newspaper in London. He's also the author of the consumer guidebook, How to Buy. Leo Hickman, welcome to The Connection.
Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us about how this quest actually started. It started with that book, How to Buy?
That's right, yeah. It was a general consumer guide of how to buy all the big purchases in life, your home, your car, washing machines, you know, even down to diamond engagement rings, all the kind of things we kind of spend months of thinking about and trying to get the best bargain for. And then when I was writing it, I thought, well, we should have a sort of at least a footnote on just getting behind, you know, the thought process of finding those bargains. And do we actually think behind the products? Do we think about who's made it, who and how it's got to the shop where we're buying it from? So we did a little panel in the book called Ethics Watch, and in it we described, you know, named some of the big brand names, said, you know, what their in the factories they make, what, you know, the human rights record, you know, are they, you know, polluting the environment? It was just an exercise into thinking behind the act of purchasing, and that kind of ballooned and became a bigger idea. And I was asked to start thinking about a guide for ethical living. I mean, it's a, you know, it's, we hear about it all the time. We, you know, as you said in the setup, about, you know, we've got to go organic, we've got to use our cars less. And the Guardian said, well, let's try and do a book about this, you know, as almost a consumer guide version of ethical living. But then I felt, well, I'm really going to have to give this a go. I mean, I'm not exactly, you know, I'm not exactly an eco-warrior myself. I, you know, have done all the normal things. I sort of, you know, go on foreign holidays in big jets. I, you know, go to the supermarket all the time. I'd never really thought about purchases in that sort of ethical way. So I'm sort of now about 2 months into a 6 month experiment, reporting on it, sort of the highs and lows, warts and all, how I'm getting along. And I'm trying, you know, myriad different things. As you said, I'm trying the organic vegetable box. I'm trying to, I've just tried to do an ethical holiday, which was amusing.
Well, tell us about the ethical holiday.
Ethical holidays. Okay. In Europe in particular, I guess it's the same in the States as well, but in Europe has a booming budget airline business at the moment.
Cheap flights,
yeah.
So $20, you can go to another
country.
You
just log onto the website a few months before, the earlier the better, and the price is cheaper, you know, the earlier you try and book it. And it's hugely tempting, and I've done it, you know, many times over the last sort of 5 or so years. You you just go onto the website, book a, you know, see where in Europe would be nice, book a flight, then get there, rent a car, just drive around, you know. And we tend to think this is a great, you know, solution to, you know, getting away from the sort of package type holidays where you just sit on a lounger, you know, for 2 weeks and you can actually get out and explore. But I think people are now beginning to think a little bit more about this, about why do we, you know, there's, if you look up in the sky of Europe, this is a zigzag of sort of vapor trails going across the sky with all these planes flying everywhere. And so for the ethical holiday experiment, my partner and I and our 4-month-old baby at the time decided to try and go on a normal touring holiday in Italy. So we were going to go in from London, where I live, all the way to Umbria to go on a walking holiday instead of just renting a car. So that was our first thing. And then we thought, well, we don't want to just fly there. Let's see if we can get there. So we looked into how we could do it with less impact than flying. So, you know, in the end, we found out that it's not perfect, but a train is responsible for about 3 times less carbon emissions per passenger mile than going by plane. And the shorter the flight, the more impact it has, apparently. So if you were flying all the way to Australia, it would be, you know, you'd be pumping out, you'd be responsible for a lot of carbon emissions, but proportionally it wouldn't be as bad as going on a short-haul flight. So we went on this 2-week holiday, went by train all the way there, which is actually, with a very young baby, was actually proved to be, I would argue, a more enjoyable experience than waiting in a departure lounge for 3 hours, you know, going on a crammed plane. And we had the whole length of the train to go on. And then when we got there, we had a walking holiday, which was, in fact, was something I've never done before. And actually was a very enjoyable holiday.
So did you achieve the holiday objective, which is basically to relax, have fun, and not spend too much money that you feel?
I was just going to move on to that. People, when I got back, everyone said, well, was it a slog? Was it hard work? You know, did you come back and feel like going on another holiday, which is often what many of us feel like? And there were times when it was hard work. I mean, the fact that we were carrying our 4-month-old baby daughter around, you know, in the sort of 30-plus degree heat, that made things tricky. But the actual getting there by train was very, very enjoyable. And you see the countryside, you appreciate the distance you've travelled. It was a good experience. There were moments of it where we thought, you know, we'd like to just have a car here to drive around. But, it was a great experiment and a very, very enjoyable holiday.
Let me ask you about something which, at least reading about it, doesn't sound so enjoyable. The wormery, which you have in your backyard.
Well, that was going swimmingly until this weekend.
Swimmingly? Just swimming right into the house.
Exactly. What happened is we started this about 6 weeks ago, and it's hard to describe. It's like a series of trays on top of each other.
Yes, do describe the worms.
and then so they're stacked on top of each other. Then the lowest tray, you put inside it about 1,000 normal garden worms, which sounds a lot, and they arrive in the post, which I was a bit worried about, you know, animal welfare issues here when the worms arrived in the post. But you put them in there, then you put all your kitchen scrapings, all your potato peelings, everything. You try and get into the habit of putting all your organic sort of waste that you create from the household. So it's not just kitchen scrapings. It can be everything from when you're vacuuming your floor inside in the bags. You can put all that dust in there. Anything that's been alive at one point. So you can get paper, cardboard, egg boxes, the lot, can all go in there. And the worms, you know, just busily merrily along. They go along eating all this organic waste and then turn it into it's a lovely, dark, rich compost, which you can then put on your garden, put in your window boxes. And it also provides a very organic plant food, like a liquid waste at the bottom, which you mix with water. So it was going absolutely fine. And then it's been pretty hot in the UK over the last sort of, well, this weekend in particular. And we noticed that there was a lot of fruit flies around, which is fairly unusual. We moved the wormery further away from the house. We were lucky. You can keep them indoors, apparently. You can keep them in the cellar or in, you know, back room. But we actually had ours outside by the back door. But we've moved it now right to the other end away from our house. And the fruit fly situation does seem to reduce. But it has really transformed. I'm a big advocate for it. I'd say that it's really changed the way we think about just our in our household in our about our kitchen waste, and it has reduced our the trash we put out for the what we call in the UK the bin men a lot. We say I reckon it's about down about 30%, which is pretty significant. And it's, you know, it's nice to know that it's all just being eaten away by the worms outside, and it will go on our garden.
So you think you're making progress on the ethical index. I think I have to compliment you too. If with the prospect of 1,000 worms arriving in your mailbox, you were worried most about animal welfare groups. I'd worry about worms getting into. But you're not the only one evaluating your performance. You actually have auditors who come into your house and go into absolutely everything.
It was a very scary
and unfortunately,
process.
You may not want this, but we're joined on the line now from London by one of the auditors, Renee Elliott. She's the founder of the Planet Organic Supermarket, which I have to say that I do use in London. Renee Elliott, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
First of all, was the wormy your idea?
No, it wasn't actually. I don't have any garden where I live in London, so I just don't tend to think of things like that. I did recommend that he compost vegetable and kitchen waste because it can make an enormous difference to the amount of rubbish you put out. But the wormy thing wasn't mine, although I think it's a stunning idea.
When you first walked into Leo Hickman's house in London, what were you most concerned about that was unethical in his lifestyle?
Well, not so much because it was unethical, but because it's my real focus in life is food. And I just couldn't wait to get into his kitchen and start going through his cupboards and rifling through his drawers and his fridge, because I love going through people's cupboards and seeing what they eat, if they're buying organically, what sorts of garbage you'll find in the food that they're buying, that they're feeding themselves or their children. So that's what I was very excited about. But I have to say, the area that most people don't really think about, where I found some what I called horrors, were in his medicine cabinet, in his bathroom, in terms of body care, shampoos, face creams, all those sorts of things, where there are so many chemicals added in, and people just don't really think about it, because you do absorb 60% of what you put on your skin and 80% of what goes in your mouth, like toothpaste, which have some pretty scary ingredients in them if you stop to try and read the labels.
Well, this might be deeply embarrassing for Leah, but well, you've agreed to come on the program. Tell us what happened when you opened the fridge. What did you see that appalled you from your standpoint?
Well, it wasn't that scary because there were lots. He didn't have a lot of processed foods, which was good, but he didn't have a lot of organic. And I'm very pro-organic in terms of, I mean, I think you need to hook people with the whole ethical idea. You need to hook them in terms of their how it affects them personally. People are very selfish, and that's fine. And they aren't necessarily interested in the environment. So if you talk to people about the health benefits of eating organic, how they aren't taking in foods that have artificial pesticides and herbicides on them, you can often get people interested. So that's really my hook. And looking in his fridge, there were lots of fruits and vegetables, which was good, but they weren't organically grown. I saw maybe one or two things on the kitchen counter. But I'm really into organic, particularly when it comes to dairy products and meat and poultry.
So it's okay to have meat in the ethical life?
Yes, I think it's fine. I think if you're buying meat and you want to be ethical about it, organic is very important because the conventional meat and dairy industries, the way they treat the animals, the way they damage the land and the surrounding water is very irresponsible and quite scary, I think, when you think about this happening over a long period of time and no one taking responsibility for and cleaning up the damage. If you buy organic meat and chicken, lamb, pig, it's a completely different system of agriculture. The way the animals are raised, the way they're treated, the feed that they get. Conventional meat
Renee,
production.
Renee, I'm afraid we're going to have to drop you. You're there. Go organic, the first line of our mantra. Thank you for joining us here on The Connection. And to our listeners, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Lise Doucette. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Lise Doucette. You're listening to The Connection. And this hour, we're discussing the ethical life. Are you living one? Do you want to live one? And is it really worth all the bother and maybe the cost to try to live more ethically to save yourself and the planet? Our guest is Leo Hickman, who's a features journalist for Britain's Guardian newspaper. A few months ago, he started thinking about every aspect of his life, the food he eats, the cars he drives or doesn't drive, the kind of holiday he takes, even the worms he has in his garden. Leo Hickman, we just heard from Renee Elliott, the founder of Planet Organic, that you really should buy organic for everything you eat. But can everyone really afford to buy organic?
It's a good point. I mean, in the last 2 months, I've been after Rene visited the house, I signed up, as sounds like you did, to an organic box scheme, and I went to visit the company that did it, went to look at how they distribute the food, because I think that's an important part of our food industry. And there's absolutely no denying that it probably adds about, in the UK at least, a 15 to 20% premium to food costs compared to the normal supermarket run that I was doing, when I would just go along with a big trolley about every fortnight and we would load up on fruit, veg, everything, meat, all the household products. And but what we found is we've you know, there's a big, a lot of people just say this is a big kind of middle class preoccupation. You know, anyone who can afford to go organic will of course go organic, because it's a bit of a no-brainer when you look at the, you know, the facts and figures. We found that we've sort of tried to, certainly with the vegetables and the meat, go organic. And then there's also other issues, like such as all your store cupboard, things like your rice, your pasta, any tin products. And to try and go 100% organic, there's no denying it, pretty expensive. But I think you have to just reevaluate how, you know, what you eat is, you know, obviously the most important thing you probably do other than breathing. So you have to sort of try and get out, I think, out of, this is what we've tried to convince ourselves, is you've got to get out of this bargain mentality when it comes to food. You know, when we try and buy our VCR or our computers, we always want to try and get the best deal. And I don't know if trying to apply that logic to food is necessarily the best way. It's not something we should bargain with and haggle.
It's not so straightforward, is it? Because the labeling now, everyone wants to be organic, and you sometimes are told that things are organic, and in fact, mm-hmm. they're not.
Well, Rene, who's a part of the Soil Association as well as being the founder of the Planet Organic Shops, in the UK, the Soil Association is the leading certification body, and there's about 9 of them. I might be wrong, but there's a good handful of these bodies around, and you know, me as the normal consumer, I don't really know the subtle differences between them. And I know that around the world there are, you know, hundreds of these bodies that, you know, have their own rules about what is organic and what isn't organic. But I think if you hold up your vegetables one day and you see if they've got on the packaging, you see if, hopefully it hasn't got any packaging. But if there is packaging, you can see the label from the certification body.
Let's just talk a little bit about this audit in general, though, mm-hmm. Leo. When they came to your house, did it actually bug you a bit that they were taking the moral high ground, telling you how to live your life?
Well, I did think that a bit. I thought there was 3 of them. There were 2 others as well as Rene. And when they went round, it was tempting to feel that, you know, I'm being preached at here. I'm being told that, you know, my life isn't. And then that's exactly why I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to present that to the listeners today, that I'm this sort of figure that's got all the answers. I mean, I think the ethical living experiment, one thing it has proved is this is just one big journey. I'm never going to reach my destination, as far as I can work out, you know.
But what is the destination, though? To be completely ethical, not allowed a little bit of contradictions and compromises along the way?
Yeah, I think I think this is certainly a journey. I don't think there is a destination. I don't think that one day I'll just wake up and go, hallelujah, I'm ethical. You know, I can relax now. I've done it. I think this is going to be an ongoing project, and that's part of what the experiment has revealed. I mean, to explain the term ethical living a little bit better, I mean, I'd say, you know, a big chunk of it is about reducing our impact on the environment. And so, but the way that it's subtly different from just being an sort of eco-living or things you may have heard about before, I think, is that there's a few other aspects to my life I've sort of reappraised. And it's the feeling of kind of being isolated from your local community. So it's trying to move away from the me culture to the we culture, you know, so there's been a few other bits and pieces I've done where it's a little bit about being a better neighbour, you know, things where a lot of us are familiar with. But when you're living in the city, you can feel a little bit kind of lonely and isolated, and you'll just put your head down. You can be a little bit selfish in the way that you live. So it's moving a little bit beyond. a lot of it is about eco-living and reducing your impact on the environment and also reducing the amount of toxins we introduce into our body. There are other bits and pieces to this experiment.
Well, we're going to hear more about them as you continue on your ethical journey, Leo Hickman. We're going to bring in someone else now who actually took a short trip on an ecological journey. He lived in what's called the Environs Eco House in Leicestershire in England for 1 year. Barclay Crowther is the lead singer of a band called Lucy Fantastic. And he agreed that he would live in this eco house, which is powered by solar heating. It has a garden compost. The furniture is made of recycled materials. Even the wallpaper is made of recycled paper. In fact, the visitors are told they could lick the wallpaper to see how earthy it feels. That was the problem. He was living in a tourist site. So Barclay Crowther did have to sacrifice to live ecologically and ethically. He joins us now. Barclay Crowther, you've left the house now. Did it have a big impact on your life? Have you changed completely now?
I think possibly maybe I have changed, but I was a complete optimist when I entered the house, and basically, probably similar to Leo, I had enough sort of body care and hair care products in my cabinet to create my own hole in the ozone layer. But I actually went into the house completely open-minded, thinking, oh, the damage has already been done. But I've sort of moved away from it now, and I'm sort of trying to lead my lifestyle a little bit more efficiently than I did before, really.
So you've changed at least your hair products, your beauty products.
Oh,
every
yeah.
rock singer yeah. needs beauty products. What was one of the things in the house that you found most difficult, though?
Strangely enough, there wasn't actually an aspect of the house as such that I found difficult. The crossover from living where I lived to where I was going to live was actually relatively unnoticeable in the fact that I just moved in and they've got a kitchen with appliances, they've got a living room, they've got a bedroom, it's got solar panels on the roof, but all these things were there for me already, so I just literally moved into this house and made use of them without really thinking too much about the fact that I was actually using energy efficient appliances or the fact that I was walking out into the garden and picking my own vegetables to eat and so forth. So the actual crossover wasn't really that difficult. The only difficult aspect for me personally was the fact that because it's a tourist attraction here in Leicester in the UK, the people would frequent the building daily, and I would just have to try and get on with sort of living my life day to day with people walking through when I'm cooking, when I'm sitting in the living room watching TV. People would walk through and ask me questions, but that was the only sort of difficult aspect.
And were you the preacher for an ecological, ethical life, or why did you do it?
Initially, why I did it was because I was working away from Leicester, where the house is based, and a friend of mine said they are looking for someone to live in this house rent-free for 12 months. It's an eco-friendly house. It's full of all the state-of-the-art appliances. It's solar-powered. It's got wind turbines on the roof. The only catch is that people will be walking around the house, and if you fancy, you know, living there for 12 months, then all you've got to do is literally write a letter. So initially my first thoughts were, great, I need someone to live for 12 months, so I'm going to apply and see what happens.
But was it hard work, having to worry about which garbage goes where, how to take care of the toilet?
Not really, because it just became a second nature. I think there's sort of a real misconception with sort of being environmental, the fact that you kind of, people generally in this country sort of think you live some kind of Grizzly Adams kind of existence where you sleep in a mud hut and your toilet is a hole in the ground. Well, it's not. It's just a regular house with a washing machine, a dishwasher, sinks. The only difference being in the kitchen alone was the fact that there was actually three different waste bins for different kind of products. So that was the only difference. But the only thing for me was that when I was actually putting anything in the bin, I just to make sure I had to open the right cupboard. And it was really a simple, it was a real simple process, which is, you know, that's the one thing that really surprised me the most about the whole experience.
Barclay Crowther, we're very glad you joined us here on The Connection to tell us about your experience. Barclay Crowther, lead singer of a band called Lucy Fantastic. He was in Environs Eco House in Leicester in England for 1 year. Maybe we'll have a song coming out of that band about what it's like to live the ethical life. Well, let's take a caller now from Burlington in Vermont. Jerry, what do you want to say about this quest to live the ethical life?
Well, I believe in it. I believe in doing it. I try it. I started eating organic way back in the late 60s, I guess it was. And I do my best. I can't, like, I really like avocados. And when I was in the supermarket the other day, where there were $2.79 or something like that for the organic, and I didn't buy them. But I would have, you know, if it had been a little less, I would have bought that. But you said a little while ago that you don't know if it's organic, and I'm hearing more and more scandal about that. So it seems more than a little duplicitous on the parts of organic growers. We're fortunate here in Vermont that a lot of it is grown locally, at least in the warm weather. We don't eat pine trees in the winter.
But that's interesting that you said that you, when it came down to it, the price is what influenced you, and not whether...
If you're rich, you can follow that plan, you know? If you're rich and you just don't give a damn, I mean, you know, it raised avocados to $12, and I still love avocados. I do love avocados, and I know they're good for you. But there's a limit where I say, well, I can't do it. I want to tell you something that I know. I own a restaurant myself, and I cannot do it organically in any way. I mean, we do organic as much as we can in the summer, but not as far as meats and chicken goes. I went to a place in Manhattan on the west side called 107 West, a wonderful restaurant. And for a while, they had the greatest chicken, fried chicken in the world, I thought, or at least I'd ever had. And they had the option of selling it as regular chicken or organic, and it was a dollar more. So naturally, I got organic, and it really tasted fabulous. And the next time I came in, it went for a while, next time I came in, the guy says, we had to drop it. Nobody was ordering it. A dollar. You know, and I'm not saying these people are bad people. I'm saying they got to worry about their money. On the other hand, this is the point I really wanted to make. When you try to live an ethical, what you're saying, ethical life, I don't feel too sanctimonious about it, but I'm doing the best I can. And you know that for all of us who put our aluminum cans in a separate thing and, you know, cash them in that way, whatever, there's one major corporation across the Champlain that pollutes the water incredibly and incessantly. So no matter what we do, it's worse than a drop in a bucket, because we're saying we're accomplishing something. Well, we're not. We're not accomplishing anything, because these guys are doing 50 times worse. I guess it's the argument probably will be made that it's better to try and fail than to not try at all and just give up on it.
So there, Jerry, you're trying to eat organic when you feel the price justifies it. You're actually thinking about the politics of it, which is also, we understand, part of trying to live the ethical life. Yeah. Let's bring in Leo Hickman here now. What's your response to some of the concerns of Jerry?
Well, on his last point, I agree with him. Sometimes I've, you know, sat there thinking, well, you know, what on earth is the point of all this? You know, it's just little me against all the big companies, big government. You know, I get a chance every 4 or 5 years to vote. That's my only chance to sort of, you know, change the government. But other than that, that's about it. So, but then I kind of think, well, you know, as Jerry said, well, you know, it's better to be trying than not trying at all, I think. And I look at it in the point of view that I think our power as consumer is a lot stronger than our power as a voter. And where and how I spend my money, which is one of the most powerful things I can do, I think. I just need to think about that, and I think that it's better to just be aware of these things. You know, I'm just trying to do my little bit. I'm not saying that, you know, it's succeeding or it's failing. I'm just, you know, it's just an experiment.
But individual effort must be a key part of this idea of living the ethical life. It has to begin at home, and this idea of, you know, when a butterfly flaps its wing in Texas, mm-hmm. it has an impact on events around the world, that little by little, but you have to take a step.
Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, you know, the fact we're talking about this today on a radio show, you know, is a good sign. You know, the more the kind of, you know, what politicians love to call the mood music, you know, the people, the more we talk about this and, you know, it seeps more into our culture, and we get away from what we seem to have been doing for the last couple of generations of not really thinking about this and just driving on for ever sort of better consumer products and ever better marketing and distribution systems, which seems to have got us into this a little bit of this hole. Then, you know, that's a better thing.
Well, see, you're thinking, you're quite extraordinary, because you're thinking about every single aspect of your life. Jerry, what other parts of your life are you rethinking, besides, of course, the food, the politics?
Well, you know, when I was very young, all of that, it's all interrelated to me. It's all finally political and economic. But when I was very young, in I hate to say when, but it was the late 40s, after the war, there was a shortage of sugar. They said there was a shortage of sugar and a shortage of coffee, and now you could get it, so they jacked the prices way up. It was a lot of crap. But the truth was that I remember it was a spontaneous thing. I don't remember anybody causing it. People stopped buying sugar and coffee, and the price went way down, way down. And when I see, through that learning experience, I drive my car less. I talk to people about driving it less. Just one, if we all drove it once less. I heard somebody, I think on your show, say, if the if everybody filled up their topped off their tank on Monday, the price would be higher on Tuesday. You know, for whatever reasons, I don't buy those reasons. Well, if the other thing could be true, if it could be everybody were not. If everybody took one less car trip a week, you know, that would be felt. They would notice that. You know, the rich would notice that. The oil companies would notice it. On another much more minor point, I haven't used toothpaste with fluoride or any other crap or shampoos. I'm glad you said that about ingesting it through the skin because I assumed that, but I wasn't sure if it was so. And, you know, I told a friend of mine not to buy, she was feeding her kid, I don't want to say a brand, but she was feeding her kid hydrogenated peanut butter, you know, partially hydrogenated. And I'd heard it was bad for you. I didn't know how bad it, now they've changed the names, I think, to con us a little bit. But they're saying don't have any level of trans fatty acids. And she just wrote me a letter thanking me.
Well, Jerry, we want to thank you both for inspiring all of us by the ways, big ways and small ways, you're trying to change your life. And we hope our listeners are listening. We hope actually that chicken comes back too, so you can continue to enjoy us. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Lise Doucette, standing in for Dick Gordon. You still have time to get in touch. 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. And today we're talking about the ethical life. Is it a life worth living and can you afford it? What about if you started to think about every aspect of your life? The food you eat, where you shop, the kind of holidays, and how many times a day you flush your toilet. Do get in touch. I'm Lise Doucette in for Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Today we're asking about the ethical life. What are you doing to try to make yourself live a bit more ethically? Make some decisions about the food you eat, where you shop, how you drive and where you drive your car. We're speaking to Leo Hickman, a writer for Britain's Guardian newspaper, who is trying to live an ethical life. And he's on the line from London, England. Leo, you've been doing it now for about 2 months. The more you do it, the more you have experience on this journey. Do you have a better idea of what it involves? Because it's simply not about putting organic vegetables in the fridge, is it?
No, it's kind of that, you know, it's one minor part of it. What I found from the start, it was just about sort of stepping back. It was, you know, I'm doing this jointly also with my partner and our baby. So we're looking at it as a, from a family unit, just sort of trying to step back, just sort of say, hang on a second, you know, what are we doing in all aspects of our life, you know, and just going through. So we've sort of broken it down, all the different things we do, sort of holidays, food, the workplace, your transport, the way you invest your money at a bank, the way you throw out your trash every week. How to, you know, raising our baby, that's a big part of this, you know, how you interact with your local community. So it just every time, you know, as the 2 months have gone on, it has, we do think of another thing, we kind of come across a new sort of hurdle. But as I said, it's a little bit about the journey, it's not about getting to the destination.
That's the destination. Yeah. It's the journey. Well, let's bring in some of our callers to hear about their journeys and whether or not they're making one at all. Peter is calling us from Newton, Massachusetts. Peter.
Yes. Your subject about ethical behavior, it seems that it's only about organic food or where we eat or what food or how often we drive, flush our toilets. There's so much more to it. How we treat our neighbors, whether we drive the speed limit, do we let others cut in, excuses that we make every day, how we compete in business, you know, are we being fair, all the way to tax returns. And, you know, you talk about conservation, and there's almost a conservation sometimes in respect, how much we respect one another. It's almost like something that's finite, and we don't want to maybe waste it on people who maybe can't help us. So that's my comment.
And are you thinking about all those things day to day?
Am I thinking about?
Are you thinking about those issues that you raised?
Every day.
Every day you get up, it's exhausting to have to think about that and still stop at the red light as well when you're driving to work.
Well, sure, but it's just a daily thing. I mean, you're driving to work, you feel like you're speeding or not, somebody wants to cut in, you think about that. You know, certainly I don't think about tax returns or excuses that we make, but there's so many basic things all day long that you go through, and you have to make a decision, and you realize that you are. It might be a natural thing, but you do realize that you're making a decision when you put something into a proposal or whatever. When you're making excuses, you're aware that perhaps you've done something wrong. You've shown up late, but you start talking about the traffic or gas station, there was a big line or something.
And Peter, this is for you, this is the good life. You feel this gives you a better quality of life. This is not driven simply by guilt or duty.
No, I think it's certainly the good life. There's really no way to spread it. It is a good feeling when you wave somebody through and they wave back, or this person's trying to back out of their driveway and there's just a line of cars and there's nobody who gives them a break. I mean, if you do stop, they wave, and that is worth something, that you've done a favor for somebody and they've acknowledged it, and you don't do it for the acknowledgement. But it's sometimes nice, you know, when somebody does wave or somebody does thank you.
Well, this is nice. Let me just bring in Leo Hickman. Leo, you're trying to write this ethical guide, if you like, but doesn't Peter's comments underline that it's very much an individual thing, a journey, as you call it? We all have different ideas about what actually it will include.
Yeah, I mean, Peter's point is absolutely spot on. I mean, the bit about, he's essentially saying that, you know, buying your organic box is great, but in a way that that's just a little bit of it. And I found that it can be seen as you're just buying off your conscience. If you can afford to buy organic, then great, but you know, you're just giving yourself a little pat on the back because you can afford it or whatever. But I think it's a very good point. I mean, and that's where the true definition of ethics, you know, comes into this, is about, you know, doing the little things in life that, you know, gives a smile to someone else. And that's more about my point about getting involved in the local community, being a better neighbor, some of those sort of basic things that we take for granted, which, you know, myself living in a city, you know, we don't come across that often. When I sat down with my partner, we sort of talked about this, we didn't want it to be, you know, joining up for a gym, you kind of give it a good go for 3 months and then you kind of get bored of it, or the latest fad diet, you give it a go for, you know, a few months and then that's it. You know, you've ticked that off, you've tried one, a new lifestyle. I didn't want this experiment, this ethical living, to be just another diet or, you know, joining up for a gym. I wanted it to be a little bit more than that. And I wanted, a big part of it, as I said, was, you know, is about the environment and reducing our impact and that kind of thing. But I think Peter's spot on where he says that it's about just taking a step back and trying to be, you know, I hate to use the term better person because I don't want this to be a preachy kind of exercise. And there is a big danger I found of that, you know, you can really turn people off when you start going, well, I've started my organic box this week, or I've set up a wormery. It's just a little thing that I'm trying at home.
Yes.
In my own life, I'm just having a look at my own life and just seeing, you know, what things I can do.
And what things work, because ultimately, like
exactly.
The idea with the gym, you've got to be committed. You have to basically feel that this is something that you want. Well, let's see what our callers want. Terry is now calling from Amherst in Massachusetts. Terry, tell us a bit about your life, ethical or not.
Oh, well, I've been at it for a while, more or less. But first, I'd like to say it's wonderful to have you on The Connection, Lise, and I've enjoyed your work on the BBC.
Oh, good. I hope it's morally correct to have me here. Part of the ethical life of The Connection with the Organic Box. So what about your life?
Well, one of the things I do quickly, I didn't mention this in my discussion with the screener, but, you know, it's so simple, but I throw all my bags in the trunk. I use double paper bags, and I've been using the same bags for years, and then they go in the trunk, and I found out at Stop and Shop here, this is a big chain in New England, that in 1 year, because people brought in their own bags, they were able to save over 50,000 trees. I hope that's a true fact, but that's a quickie that goes right in the trunk, and you can, you know, and have an impact there. But my main reason for calling is that I feel that the biggest challenge, and actually your author has just addressed it, which is being preachy or whatever. He has a young child, a baby, and he's in for a shock when he starts to raise this child, and this child will be coming in contact with the mainstream, let's say. I find that so many parents have to decide whether to put their children in really almost closed, intentional schools and communities or whatever, so that they can control what they eat, what they see on television and whatnot. But my main thing is that what has to be addressed is when we start this process of living responsibly, is not judging the people who aren't. And that is so difficult when you're in back of a big Yukon or a big Ford Explorer at the ATM, and your stomach starts to knot up, and you see this one little person in the driver's seat, and they're driving this massive tank of a car. And you know, you're sitting there all perfect in your little Toyota Corolla with your 35 miles a gallon or whatever. And what I find is that the hardest thing is to not judge the other people. And believe me, you do it. And that is the challenge, because it turns people off. And this is a wonderful movement, the whole organic movement, living consciously. But people are seeing that it becomes almost like a religion at the expense of generosity towards others. And we're just losing that so much. And our food means so much more to us than human beings.
Well, very good point, of course, because it is really unethical, however way you look at it, to be judgmental. But Terry, you made a very good point about bringing up children. Let me bring in Leo Hickman here. I don't know how old your child is. What happens when he or she goes to school and then comes back with ham loaded with preservatives, chocolate filled with all kinds of additives? What do you say?
Well, firstly, our daughter's 4 months, and she's called Esme, and it's going to be a couple of years yet. But that's a huge huge issue for us, and it's as with any parenting issue, I think you just need to try and do the best you can. There's no answer to it. Of course, she's going to say, oh, can I watch the television now? Or, she's going to, as you said, come home, munching on some candy bar or whatever, And there's only so much you can do. So you can only really do the best you can by educating her, in the way that, you've found through your own experiences. I don't think there's really a solution to that. I mean, it's making the best of a bad lot in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm new to this parenting game, so yes. Any advice, please ring in. But
let's move on to our other point, the judgmental one. Tell us honestly, you can't help but feel a little bit virtuous, a little bit self-righteous when you think, oh my goodness, look what this is doing to our planet, and telling people about it, and that edge in the voice creeps in.
I think the big difference is the telling people about it. If you can be happy with yourself and pat yourself on your back, on your own back, so to speak, and you can say, I feel good that I, as Peter said, let that person out in the line, and they drove off and they gave me a wave, or I feel good that I'm eating organic produce, or I feel good that I'm feeding my baby organic produce. I think that's where the satisfaction lays. And I think it is a huge problem, the preaching side or the judgmental side. And
But then again, it's a contradiction here because you do want to spread the message. Let me bring in Terry again. Terry, how do you do it? You want to share your ideas and your enthusiasm, but you don't want to put people off. I mean, how are you doing it?
Well, you know, I think you just allow people to see the choices you make. I happen to be in my I'm 58 years old, and this just came off the top of my head because you came back to me, but I'm in very good physical condition, and I have a hard physical job. I clean houses. I have a cleaning business, and I work hard, but I don't have health insurance, and I have to be very careful about what I do eat. I just had a wonderful cup of coffee. It was delicious. I enjoyed it thoroughly, but I have to be careful. I'm not going to, to not smoke. I love smoking cigarettes, but I don't smoke because it's bad. But I feel like when people look at me and they see that I am healthy and I don't look my age and I'm strong and all of that, that is almost the best, that's almost the best thing you can do. And then if they come to your home and they see what you're eating and you're not preaching at all, but that they might, it's a very subtle kind of message that you send, but not consciously. And it's sort of like religion. I'm also a Catholic and a Christian, and I do believe that, the best way to practice your religion is to practice it and live it and not preach it and not try to jam it down somebody's throat, but to live, to live as best and as generously as you can.
Terry, well, that's a Terry, very good way to sum it up. We thank you so much for joining us, and go back and have another coffee, especially if it makes you feel good. Just one thing about this, living the ethical life. Is it okay, though, if we slip? The whole point is we shouldn't feel guilty, should we, if every once in a while we go off the track, we do something because it makes us feel good, and the next day we wake up and we go organic and we use the compost and try to live it according to our principles?
Yeah, of course. I mean, as you say, slip up probably every hour of the day in some way.
Do you feel guilty now, though, when you do it?
A little bit. I mean, it's interesting because, as I said before I started this, I was, just merrily going along, eating my fast food or, going on these sort of getting on a plane, going on holiday. And now I'm thinking a bit more about it. I do sometimes feel a bit guilty. And I think it was interesting what Terry said about, that sort of religious feeling of guilt. I have sort of experienced that a little bit where you've set this almost a manifesto for your life to live, which is a very unusual thing for me. I don't have a religious upbringing, or I don't prescribe to a certain faith or anything. So this is almost, getting a bit deep here. It's almost been a bit like supplanting a religion into my life a little bit.
You called it a journey, Leo Hickman, and we really do wish you well on your journey, even if you occasionally take some detours. We thank you very much for joining us. And a reminder to our listeners that you can actually keep track of the journey taken by Leo Hickman by going to his website, www.theconnection.org, at our own website. I'm Lise Doucette. You've been listening to The Connection. Do keep listening. And I'm standing in for Lise Doucette. So, for Dick Gordon.